I am Michael Fannin. I am the CTO for DuCloud. We do some interactive campus map stuff. You've probably seen us giving away crap. We'll have some stuff later on today. I'm also a writer for .edu Guru. Show of hands, everybody reads. Yes, got our RSS feed in your readers and everything. You should check it out if you don't. Lots of good stuff there. The video, if you want to watch the video again from the pre-keynote, we've got it up already. I'm also the director of web marketing for Pittsburgh State University. That is my full-time job. It's kind of what I do occasionally when I'm bored. If you want to follow me, I'm Fannin on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, that crap. And then if you're tweeting, I will read the back channel afterwards. You're welcome to talk badly about me however you want. Is Tony here? I don't see Tony yet. Oh, that's disappointing. He always is fun to talk bad about me. Anyway, hi, Web, TNT10, do whatever you want. So to get started, what I want to do is I want to get everybody audience participation first thing. I want everybody to read with me. I'm going to count down 3, 2, 1, and I'm going to click the slide and then read whatever is there. I swear it's not bad. Sort of. Okay, but will everybody promise me that to start?
Are you saying read out loud?
Yes, read out loud. I want everybody to say it. I want you to shout it at me, okay? So I'm going to go 3, 2, 1. We suck. Awesome. That went better than I could have expected. No, I do that for a reason, though. I want to start this presentation as low as humanly possible so that we have nowhere to go but up, right? So that's a good way to get things rolling, I think. But no, really, what I want to do is this is not a bad presentation, and I'm not going to be disparaging anybody as much as I like to. I actually have 3 goals. And the 3 goals I want you guys to walk away from this presentation with is, first, I want to inspire you a little bit, right? I want you to walk away from here with some ideas, maybe some thoughts, something you can take back and go, maybe we could do this. The second thing I want is I want to motivate you, right? And this kind of goes back to what Doug told us during orientation. You're going to go away from here with tons and tons of ideas. Try to do one of them. That's all you really need to worry about. And I don't care if it has anything to do with what I talk about. I don't care if I give you motivation to do something you got out of another presentation. Just go do something. The third is the hard one, though. The third one is the one that takes a little bit of time and effort, and that's, I want to get your brain into a mode to think about how to innovate. Because innovation is what's really hard about what we do, right? It's hard to go out there and be new and be cutting edge and always be out there doing and coming up with all this new stuff. And that's sort of the crux of what I'll be talking about today, is this idea that we're all starting to work in this zone, and we need to get out of that zone. So, to start things off, I got to go to the past. And when I talk about the past, I'm really talking about getting into the dark ages of our websites. That's roughly 10 years ago. I picked this specifically, though, because one, it was easy. 10 years is a nice round number. But two, about 10 years ago, we all had a site by that point. We'd all gotten into a position where we'd set up a site, maybe we'd gone through a redesign, maybe we were getting ready for our first redesign. And we were starting to maybe pull in some of those first departments that had been rogue and had started trying to get some stuff put together. I'm going to look just at a few of these, like Boston University. Actually had a very nice start. They have a visual centerpiece, which I'll get to in a moment. They kind of got together with this little navigational guy down here, some tabled layout, which, yay. SUNY New Paltz. Actually, this is a great example of what we were working with 10 years ago, right? Can you feel the 640 by 480 just oozing out of this screen right now? Good example of the constraints we were working within. University of Missouri, starting to play with audience-based navigation, kind of a new thing for them. Us. Dear God, I don't know. I think we got shot in the face by a content cannon here because it's like, hey, click here. Harvard also, kind of like Missouri, though, except they were going more task-oriented rather than audience-based. The thing about all of these sites, the thing that really makes it kind of cool to go back and look at what people were doing 10 years ago is that everybody was doing things differently. We did this for one good reason. The people working on these sites back then were clueless. I mean that in a nice way. I'm not trying to say, you know, the people, because I'm sure some people are here. Who was here 10 years ago working on these websites? See? I'm not saying anything bad about you guys. What I'm emphasizing is that we don't have what we have now. We don't have, we didn't have the Noel Levitt research that was talking about what students expect, what people are looking for, UI research, all of this stuff now that we can lean on and go, here's the things that we are pretty sure work right. And so it made things kind of exciting. The way we were working was a lot different. We were doing a lot of experimenting. Who knows what would work? We'd try it, see what happened, measure it, and maybe do some changes. The thing was, we had no fear. Because if a site went down 10 years ago, if it was down for a few minutes, we'll fix it, get it back up, good deal. Now, if your site's down for 2 minutes, how many of you will have your phones ringing? Yeah, that quickly. I'm down for 1 minute. I've got enough people right now that 1 minute and I will have a phone call in my office. It's hard to be daring when you've got that much pressure on your websites. And that's kind of that's part of the problem. So today we've changed a little bit, right? We don't work the same way that we used to work. Now we take ourselves much more seriously. Not that that's a bad thing. We have to do that because as an industry, we've really changed into something that is much more legitimate, basically. We've built our industry. We've given ourselves titles. Director of web marketing manager, UX designer, these kinds of things, because not only are we trying to take ourselves seriously, but we want other people to take us seriously. We've kind of changed our edge. That's what's happened. Before, we were kind of like the machete. We're sharp, we're hacking stuff, we're doing whatever we feel like. Now we're kind of like a finely honed knife. We're still sharp, we're still cutting, but we do it in a different way, and we take care of ourselves a little bit differently. To give you an example, there's a good word that I think can kind of qualify how we work out. It's the word cool. As an example, I worked in our CMS to develop a job system. This job system was designed because the way our career services office was working was terrible. Documents, all kinds of stuff. No consistency. I got in there, we built it in our CMS, and I said, what can we do to make this a little bit better, right? What can we do to add some value elsewhere? And so I said, let's build an RSS feed out of it. I've got structured content, that's easy to do at that point. And so I built it, it worked, I dropped it into Twitter, onto Facebook, and I said, you know what, that's kind of cool. Then recently I started working on a video site. As I was working on this, I said, let's do this right. Let's give us some tools that we can use outside of that project. And in doing that, I ended up building some plugins for our content management system that pulls in JSON data, that got into OEmbed stuff, and I was like, this is cool. That's the difference. And web developers can pick up on it. You've got stuff you do that's cool, and then you've got the stuff that's cool. That's what's changed about us. We've started to conform. We're slowly kind of working within these bounds. We're starting to talk to each other. We're starting to do a lot of the same stuff. And in doing that, we're using these words like branding standards, marketing identity, these things that legitimize ourselves not only within our own industry, but when we're working with others. These are hurdles to us. That's the big deal. I just talked with somebody last week, as a matter of fact, about the hurdles they were facing in a rebranding effort. Their committee had come together and put together all of these all this documentation. They said, this is our font. This is going to be the official font of our group. And we all kind of know what that pain is like. This is what we use for our word marks and things like that. The problem is, there's a web person involved in that process. And so they show up and they say, hey, we're going to do everything with this serif font called Whitney. Everything. I hear the groans. Let that sink in. I'm not talking about just the word mark. I'm not talking about just the navigation. They had set it up where that would be everything, body text, all of it. Of course, we as web people understand you can't do that kind of stuff. It doesn't work that way. And so it became a hurdle. And she says to me, I'm already on it. I'm already talking to him and explaining why we can't do this. But because we're forced to work within these other worlds now, it becomes a problem. The redesign is what has brought all of this up. Because in the redesign, we're starting to work with marketing people, with PR people, with the academics, and all of these different areas. And that's become a real challenge for us. Over 1,200 sites have been redesigned in just the past 3 years. Raise your hands. 3 years ago or earlier, you have redesigned, right? Look at you. Keep your hands up for a second. You're in league with 1,200 other people just since 2007. You can put your hands down now. I just wanted you to feel this camaraderie building. Stuart Foss, a great guy over at edustyle.net. Everybody knows edustyle, yes, has looked at it, seen it at some point. These are just the sites he knows about, the ones that have been submitted. Think about how many others are outside of that. We feel each other's pain. We know what this is like. And not only that, so do the firms that we work with, the vendors, the design firms, the consultants. These people understand. And it's starting to show on our homepages. The reason for that is that we're starting to become routine with all of this. We understand how it works, and when we do that, things begin to normalize. Before, we may move fast, we move slow, we're going through red tape, we're getting held up in it, all over the place. Now, we're starting to work in this area, right? We're starting to, instead of bouncing up and down, we're kind of getting into here. It's good for us because our process has become much smoother. We get faster sites that are higher quality, that are easier to deploy and update. And then the vendors get to get out of our case faster with our money and move on to the next client, right? Normalization is not a bad thing, but it has a side effect. Whether intentional or not, that's dilution. Technological dilution is something we've lived with for quite a while now. Raise your hand. I keep having people raise their hand. Maybe I should have you stand up. Will you stand up for me if I ask? Okay. I tried. I figured maybe after lunch, you might want to get some exercise going on. No. How many people have either own or have direct access to through a friend or family or work one of these? Look at this. Look around. Look at how many people have access to a digital SLR, something that until just the past 10 years or so was really the realm of the professional photographer. If you didn't have thousands of dollars, you weren't getting into these. I am not a professional photographer. Let me be very clear. I am barely a good amateur photographer, but you will not get my D80 out of my hands if I were dead. I love that thing. That's technological dilution. To put it a little simpler, everybody knows one Mr. Zach Morris, yes? Everybody remembers Zach Morris and his phone. Everybody knew that guy back in the late 80s, early 90s, the one guy who had the bad jacket, the bleached hair, and the big freaking cell phone. He was like the only guy you knew that had a cell phone. Don't talk bad about him because that guy was me in high school, and I will come after you. No, but now everybody not only has a cell phone, we've gone to the second phase, right? How many people smartphone in here? Now, granted, we're a unique audience, but lots of people have smartphones now. We're moving into the second phase of dilution. It's not just about having the phone. We have great phones. That's the trickle-down effect that we see. This affects our homepage, though, in some different ways. First off, in what we use. Think about JavaScript, right? jQuery, MooTools, Dojo, these frameworks that we use now. How many people have a centerpiece using jQuery? MooTools? No MooTools people. No Dojo people either, probably, right? Okay, so jQuery is where we'll stick. jQuery is a great tool because it makes jQuery accessible. I am not a programmer. I will never sell myself as one. I suck at JavaScript, frankly. But I am awesome at jQuery. I can sling that stuff around like nobody's business because it has diluted what we can do. Not using that word in a bad way. I'm going to say that a lot. Dilution is not a bad concept. It's made things available to us that we never had before. But as we do it more and more, you can start to pick things out, right? The transitions we use, the effects we're using, you can sniff it out after a while. Same thing happens in CSS, the frameworks, Blueprint, 960, Yahoo Grids. These things are frameworks that dilute CSS to a way to make it accessible and quick to prototype and work with. There's one huge one, though, that nobody ever mentions, and we all, for the most part, have one of these, content management system. We buy these for the very purpose that they dilute technology so that the 80-year-old secretary in the art department can go maintain their faculty listing on their webpage, right? That's why we own them. That's the problem. We're creating industry homogeny. I don't know if I made that term up or not. It sounds good, though. What's happening is we as an industry, and not just us, other industries as well, are starting to kind of work into this area where we start working together, we start kind of collaborating and talking, and what happens is this. The owner looks like the pet, so to speak. As we talk together and work together, we start getting similar things happening. And this is great because it's an awesome sign of collaboration. And that's wonderful to see. I love working with people. I worked with a guy recently. They were doing an admission site. He's using geolocation and XML to customize their admission page. I'm like, that's awesome. He's like, here's the code. Thank you. It's great. I love doing that. Another example is, for instance, our news page. I just launched this. I love it. It's a huge upgrade from where we were. And I stole this thing. I stole it and I ran from these folks. CNN has a very nice page. I love how they integrated video. I love how they do their sidebars. I'm like, you know what? I can do that. I'm too lazy otherwise. I'm not a designer. I admit it. But that's what happens. This is affecting our home pages. This is us. Pittsburgh State University. I love our redesign. We came not just one, but really two generations in the process. But if you notice, we've got all the same problems a lot of folks have. even though it's nice, here's our centerpiece, we've got sort of our top navigation, here's our audience navigation, the calendar of events, which I assure you gets used constantly, news, application buttons, quick links up at the top. I mean, really, we still have a lot of those same problems happening, right? Because we're answering one big question. Everybody's trying to answer the question of how. How do we answer all of these audiences? How do we deal with all of these issues? How do we make all our 72 audiences happy and our 83 vice presidents and the one president that can fire all of us in a heartbeat? How do we make that happen? And there's no good answer because really it's a trap. All we end up doing is diluting everything we do to the point that it loses value, yes? Because really, in trying to make everything work on that homepage and trying to make that centerpiece do a bunch of different stuff, it's really doing nothing. Here's a look at University of Alabama. Is anybody from Alabama? Anybody? Bueller? No? Okay. No. I love this, actually. It's very clean. It's very crisp. They did a great job with their redesign. I'm going to flip through some more here. And I want you to just kind of look at these as I start going and just kind of pay attention. I don't do it very quickly, but try to look at what's happening here. Boston, everybody loves Boston, has always done a great job with their website. I really love this. Chico, if Tony were here, I would make a snarky comment, but oh well. Freed Hardman, I'll come back to these guys in just a second. John Hopkins, great visual stuff. Lakeland College, we've got Lethbridge, we've got Lewis and Clark. Here's Maryland, Nottingham, Stetson, Toledo, Wesleyan, Wallenog, Worcester, Worcester Polytechnic Institution. I'm Kansan, okay? Do you notice anything? No, you're all wrong. First things first. If you noticed anything, I hope you noticed they're all well done. Every one of these schools has done a fantastic job with their redesigns and getting these tools in place. And I want to emphasize that because otherwise this may come off very negative. And I know I'm a negative person, so we want to work on that. They're also very pretty. They all flow in well. They all sit inside of these nice redesigns very nicely. The best thing about all these, there's one awesome, awesome thing about all of these. There's no girls under trees. However, I call out Freed Hardman. Because by God, we will not let girls in grass take us over. Freed Hardman, anybody? I always have to be careful when I use examples, but okay, nobody from here, Freed Hardman. I'll email him and apologize. No. There is three categories that these all fall into. All of these centerpieces kind of have themes, right? The first is the visual. A good example is John Hopkins. You're looking at stuff that is very centered on the photography of what's happening, the imagery of campus. Doesn't mean you can't click through them, because obviously these click on to other stories. But the centerpiece itself is really designed around the act of making you look and stare at the screen, and the longer your eyes are here, the more likely you are to do something. The second are the informational centerpieces. These centerpieces are the ones, like Stetson, that have gone in and you've got links within your centerpiece, and those will likely not change frequently. The imagery may change, the wrappers may change, but you're linking into stuff that you want people to read. Again, random stuff. The third are the storytellers. Marketing and PR people love these, love them. Boston, for example, all about spreading the news of campus, right? Talking about the events. Telling about, you know, the cool professor with the tattoos up and down his arms who rides the motorcycle and comes in on his chopper and does all the stuff. There's an issue, though. Well, wait, let me back up one second. There is a fourth kind. I don't mention it only because the fourth kind is kind of like what we do, and it's sort of the chaotic. We don't know what the heck's going on, so we're just going to do a little bit of everything. That doesn't count, but there is a fourth kind. Here's the thing. All of these have a problem because there's one thing in common. There's nothing on any of these that is actionable. And I know some of you right now are going to sit there and you're going to go, what are you talking about? You can click through them. You can go read articles. You can go to the pages that they've got. But the thing is, putting the centerpiece out there and just saying, hey, click here to read more, it's kind of like having your 5-year-old son or daughter on the trampoline, and this is where I would normally jump up and down. Those of you who've seen me know that I'm not going to do that. And not today anyway, but it's like they're going, hey, Dad, look at me. I learned a trick. Watch me. That's what that's doing. You're screaming for attention, but you're not doing anything to deserve it. And I'm sorry if that comes off snarky, but that's the reality because we can be doing way, way more I'm sorry, it's lacking anything actionable. I gotta get my clicker going here. Here's where we get into boring stat time. And I'm gonna keep this short because boring stats are boring and I know that. So I've got three big things I wanna hit on. If you read .edu Guru, you may have noticed back in September, we put up a little survey that talked about how's your centerpiece doing, give us some information. I took some of that information and have incorporated it here. One of the first things that stood out to me came from one particular school, and I am quoting one school instead of many, and I'll explain why in a moment. They did the math and figured out that based on how many hits they get on their homepage a month versus how many people click on a centerpiece item, you get a 0.4% conversion rate. 0.4. Four people in 1,000 are clicking on a centerpiece. I hope my math on that's right. I think it is. That indicates a huge content strategy problem taking place because you're not paying attention to what's going into that centerpiece. You're not doing anything to make that better because that's an abysmal rate. That's terrible. We can do way, way better than that as web developers and as content people and as marketers especially. That's the thing. And here's why I'm only going to quote you one, because I didn't have numbers from anybody else. 79% of the people who answered the survey said, yes, we have analytics in place. We can track this information. We can do it. As a web guy, as an analytics guy, what makes me sick to my stomach, though, is that only 26% of people actually track it. And I want you to think about that, because 89% of all of the respondents said their centerpiece was driven by either marketing or PR. The marketing especially being the core place where we're looking at the numbers. We're looking at the ROI. And yet, only 26% actually pay attention to those numbers. The centerpiece is the absolute top billing on your site, and we can argue above the fold, below the fold, we can argue that crap day in and day out. The fact of the matter is, that is the top billing on your site. It's the first thing people see when they come to your homepage, and it's their first opportunity they have to interact with you. And yet we're throwing that opportunity away. We're relying on insignificant. We've changed the meaning of ROI. 0.4% is now good enough to just keep doing things the same way we're doing them, to keep going on this sort of roller coaster ride of we're just going to keep pumping out a new story every week and see what happens. We'll put a pretty girl on this one. It'll get people to click on it. And that does work, I swear to you. I've looked at our analytics. The pretty girls always get the clicks. Here's the thing. It takes effort. I know that's hard, and I've gotten flack for that before on .edu Guru that I write articles and I tell people sometimes to do our job well, we got to put in a little bit of extra work because it's not good enough to just work from 8 to 5 sometimes. The web moves too quickly. To be committed to what we do, sometimes we got to get outside of that box and outside of that comfort zone and say, you know what, now tonight I'm going to go home and I'm going to work on this to make it better. And that's hard for people. What's weird though is that with analytics, we can automate a lot of that. We can run those reports automatically and shoot them over to our marketing director and say, hey, here's the results of the centerpieces this month. Let's see what we can do to make this better. I want to look at SMSU for just a minute. Southwest Minnesota State University. Everybody's heard of this? Yes, no, maybe? Some people are familiar with it. These guys walked away from EduWeb this year during the EduStyle Awards, just blowing people away. Because they did a redesign last year, and they had just finished it when I started researching the speech. And I saw their centerpiece, and it immediately caught me as being different from everybody else, right? And the reason is, at the EduStyle Awards, they walked away with best overall website out of everybody. But not just that. They also walked away with the best homepage, and then they walked away with best redesign, and then they walked away with best visual design. These folks did a great, great job. Please tell me somebody's here from them, right? Ugh, okay. We'll keep trying then. This is their site, right? Very simple. There's nothing really crazy or wild about it, but they just did a good job, a general nice job, and they have a centerpiece even. And I'm not here trying to tell you get rid of your centerpieces because these guys are setting the standard. Here's the thing. They found the magic sauce. They figured out what to take and pour over that thing and rub it in to make that centerpiece valuable. Take a look at these. I just screenshotted these the other night to get some current stuff so you can go and look at them yourself. These are just four of them because I had some space that I couldn't really fill. I'm not a designer. Look at these for just a second, though. Let it sink in what you're looking at. Because all of these centerpieces have something that all of those other examples I showed you earlier are missing. They've got calls to action, this magic word that we use. Calls to action get you to engage with the people visiting your site. That's what this is all about, right? We want people to engage with us. We want people to do things so that we can convert them into students and ultimately make the money off of them. higher ed or not, we're here to make money. That's what keeps us sustained. They use words like click here, sign me up, bookmark this, verbs that get your brain thinking in this way of action. I'm going to do something. Your brain starts moving within those words. They're commands. When I was in a debater in high school, which is now more years ago than I care to admit, even though I know I look young, it feels bad. One of the first things we learned was in your second rebuttal, you do not give the judge a choice. You don't go up there and say, hey, I hope you vote for me. I hope we did good enough for you. No. When you're talking to somebody in those situations, you tell them what to do. You tell them, I want you to vote for me. I command you to vote for me. We did this better than them. So you're going to come here. That's what we need to look for in these centerpieces. But I have to caveat this, because this is just a symptom of a bigger problem, a bigger kind of design and web problem that we have going on. And I could very easily stand here and say, okay, so here's what you walk away with. Leave here, go redesign your centerpiece, put some call to action in it, and awesome, great job, we'll see you guys later. I'm not stopping there, though, because that's not good enough. If all we do is copy SMSU, we've only normalized ourselves again. We've only copied each other and put ourselves back in this box. We've got to keep things rolling. If SMSU is still using that exact same centerpiece 2 years from now, they will have failed at one of the core points of their redesign, because you have to keep going and you have to keep improving. You can never stop at that, because that's why we're here. That's why we love the web, right? We love coming in here and trying new things and new technologies and getting involved in ways that people haven't thought of. That's why we love what we do. And I always use the example, and I know it's a little bit overused, but of the house redesign, or remodel, rather. When you remodel your house and you've redone it, you don't say, looks good, see you guys. You have to keep mowing the yard. You got to touch up the paint. You got to keep the floors swept. You got to keep it up. You got to keep going and moving. And to do that, you have to know what to take care of. When you look at the grass, you say, yard's tall, going to mow it, right? To do that, you got to measure. This is my mantra, measure and adjust. I've said it before in articles. I've said it in other presentations. You have to measure and adjust constantly, because that's how you keep improving. And you need to make sure your legs are long enough to not let your laptop fall on the floor. Otherwise, you may break things. But before you can measure, there's one other step that has to take place first, right? You've got to set goals. You've got to know what to measure. You've got to say, hey, we want to increase the number of click-throughs on our centerpiece by X amount, and then maybe we want to increase the engagement at those pages by this amount. You need to set those goals, not just for your website, but for yourself, so you've got direction with what you're doing and you know what to measure and then what to improve. That's how we get that thing going. We've already done that once. Everybody in here was raising their hand when we did the redesign, yes? So we've already met one goal. We took something very ugly and we made it pretty. Most of the time. We've got to get rid of these old conventions that we're using, right? We can't just keep doing things the same way we've always done them, because that doesn't work. We've got to always be thinking ahead and planning ahead on how we do stuff. And to do that, that requires some new standards to be set. That requires new standards not only professionally. We know that. We always want to try to set the bar and do things better than everybody else. But sometimes that means setting new standards for ourselves as well. We're professionals. We're in an industry that takes itself seriously now, yes? So that means we've got to look at ourselves in a way that says, how can I challenge myself today? Does it mean more work? Yeah, it probably does. But really, we've got to get into that mindset, because that's how we do better. That's how we make our colleges successful, because it's not just about us. It's about the colleges, it's about the students, it's about everybody else in reality. First impressions are so important. And I hope those of you who haven't met me today will walk out thinking that maybe I'm not as insane as I sometimes come across. Some of you will probably walk out of here thinking I am more insane than I come across. That's okay. You're welcome to. The thing is, one chance to make a first impression. They're so important. We're all here to stand out for ourselves and for our schools. We want to stand out from that crowd. And I say that because it's not good enough to be pretty anymore. I clicked through a bunch of those sites that are all pretty now that didn't used to be. It's not enough to keep up. When you go into a career services situation, when you're applying for a job, when you're interviewing, any career person will tell you straight away that you have to be memorable. It's not about being the best, because you can't be the best all the time. But when you apply for a job, you can call them and follow up and just want to make sure you got everything, right? Okay, awesome. You get the interview, you email them. Hey, thanks for having me in. I appreciated the time. Here's a couple more people that you can call and talk to and get references for me on. It's about standing out and keeping yourself in a frame of mind that when people look at you, when you've got students that you're competing for with other schools in your region, with other conferences, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be the best all the time. You just need to stand out. I want to thank everybody today for coming in here. I'm amazed by how many came in. You're all beautiful, except for Tony Dunn, which would have been way more funny if he was here. I didn't have time to take it out. Anyway, fill out your comments before you leave. I really will appreciate any feedback that you guys give me. If you've been tweeting HiWebTNT10, I'm at Feenan, and I will happy to facilitate any conversation, hopefully two-way rather than one-way. Oh. Huh? Huh? Yeah. I have more stuff yet. Let's give some stuff away here.
You have to admire someone who's not
being correct.
Before we get to the questions, if there are any questions, you guys can grill him. We have two
give me your address again here. I'll tell you straight away that almost everybody does in some way, shape, or form, although Lane is telling me that she's a special person. What do we got?
UAT.edu.
I do have, as this is coming up here, for everybody else, I do have cards up here if anybody wants to grab them, some stickers. I've got bracelets and stuff you can grab for New Cloud for our Kindle giveaway during the poster session. She was asking if, are there any good examples of schools that are not using centerpieces? Okay, so. Oh, okay. So don't use Lane Side as an example. That would be, if it's something that you've got on every page, it's more than likely more of a header type element. You know, I'm not telling people to not use centerpieces because I think they are kind of integral. It's all about how you use it and how you implement that. And so if you're looking at something to put up there, just remember to make it interesting, make it something people can use, make it something you can measure and do something with, because that's what's going to keep people on your site. Anybody else? I hope this was like what everybody was expecting. I know that this wasn't as technical as some may have hoped, but... ask them. I'll be more than happy to ask. I'll feed that to Edu Guru and everybody can read it. Also, all of the results from the survey that I did, as well as this presentation and everything else, will be made available under a Creative Commons license. So take it, remix it, do whatever you please with it. I will have that up shortly after this session. I did not have a chance to get it up ahead of time. I apologize. Anybody else? Come on. Challenge me. I feel like I ran short. This is great, actually. Yes. Sure. So the question is, how do you innovate constantly? How do you always experiment? And, you know, I think those of you who went to Dylan's presentation earlier, talking about doing the skunk works, and just kind of maybe you do it on the side. That may be how you do it. Always be reading. There are so many good design resources out there. Things like PatternTap is a site I use quite constantly to look at what other people are doing and get ideas and try to mix those things together. Don't copy them, but just try to come up with inspiration and motivation to innovate. PatternTap.com. Yeah. They do lists of, if you want ideas for navigational breadcrumbs, they've got that. If you want ideas on header graphics, 404 pages, they've got lists. huge lists of all these cool little screenshots and things of that nature. It's a great resource. Yes? You know, you were making people happy with it. Yeah, the internal fuzzies sometimes are a challenge. And what I would say is, one, it always helps when you have stats to back things up. If you can show that even in the centerpiece, people aren't clicking on it, you can use that as fodder to say, hey, we actually need to do something different. We need to find a better way to push that out. You can also do some market research. Marketers will love that you're saying, hey, let's use this tool for marketing as opposed to just news, because our market research says that the only people who care about news are alumni, and alumni are not the target of our homepage. That all comes with what kind of strategy you're using on your homepage. Is your homepage geared towards only prospective students, only alumni? Try to keep that stuff in mind as you're tailoring these tools and these centerpieces, because that will play very heavily into how you determine what goes there. What do we do? Who do we make happy in those cases? Wow, I did run short. Did I skip some slides without knowing? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. And that's one reason why I love SMSU, because they took that centerpiece and turned it into a tool that students could use to sign up for, you know, pre-enrollment, for instance. It was something that they could actually use in what they were trying to do. And that's what a lot of us are missing. And that's exactly why I wanted to talk about this, because so often we do use it just as, for instance, a tool to make people happy. And our site isn't there to make our internal audience happy, at least not the homepage, generally speaking. It should be to address the core marketing needs of our school and to get those prospective students to engage with us. The longer they are there, the more they are engaging, the more chance we have to turn them into a student and make money on them. That idea, the whole cradle to endowment that got mentioned the other day, great example. You know, we've got our cradle to endowment, application to endowment. We've got to get them in that door, and the longer they're there, the more chance we have to do something with them. And if they're engaging, that's the sign. Otherwise, we're just, like I say, screaming for attention. We're just saying, hey, I hope you look at this and stay here and read this stuff. Yeah? Okay, sure. Anything that involves directly engaging with any of the programs is great. If you're looking, for instance, to use a centerpiece not on your homepage, perhaps school sites have got centerpieces, or departmental sites have got their own centerpieces. Looking at ways to, yeah, you can get rid of that if you want, Lane. I have a Dvorak layout, so you may just want to hit the escape key or Alt-F4. Otherwise, you may just like delete my computer. Anything that involves, for instance, things that the school is trying to engage students in. Things, you know, the whole request more information, but get creative with it. Figure out a way, for instance, our nursing department is a huge department on our campus. It's pretty widely renowned, so to speak. And so we might build something around that, see what the nursing department is doing, and get more information on how you can get involved, or get involved with what the nursing program is doing right now. Get them thinking in terms of, what action can I take with this school right now? If I'm a prospective student, what can I do to get involved with you guys and play with stuff or come visit campus? SMSU, again, a good example. Check us out. Come see our building. Hey, the nursing department's over in McPherson Hall. Come schedule a visit with us. Come down and see the tools we have. Don't just read about the tools. We want to show you. We want to show you our CPR dummies and the things we stab people with and that kind of stuff. So, not that I'm crazed with stabbing people. I have to fly tomorrow, so don't spread that around. No. I got 5 minutes left. how did I run so short? Was I that nervous? Did I seem that nervous? God.
How often does the message change?
That depends. And I actually looked at that with some of the survey results. The average school is running 4.5 centerpieces, like elements, like rotating elements at a time. And they varied pretty widely in terms, like we do weekly. We do one new story in our centerpiece every week. We have between 4 and 6 total, so we drop one off every week and replace it. Some do it semi-monthly or bi-monthly, every other month, whichever one that is. Some will do it quarterly. I had some people answer whenever we feel like it. I mean, the spread was pretty even. So it really comes down to what's your goal? What are you trying to get across? If you're doing real seasonal stuff, pre-register for enrollment, obviously that's not going to be useful after date X. And so it kind of depends on what engagement you're trying to encourage. What are you trying to get students to do, and how timely will that, or how long will that remain timely to them? So that, let that drive. Don't just set up a routine. We're going to put one new thing out every week, because that doesn't address the core audience. That's addressing your workflow. And it's not about the workflow. It's about the student needs, and student needs will change. Maybe something is relevant for a month. Maybe something else is relevant for 5 days. Work with that rather than the workflow.
Any other questions? Very nice, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you all. I appreciate you guys coming in.